So that is, we may finish today, it's possible. But give some time for it. And not to rush through this transmission. And I've also got it scheduled for tomorrow as well. So that's the plan. And then this afternoon, or sorry, this evening, is group practice of Dorje Drolo.
Okay.
Let's begin with the four thoughts that turn the mind from samsara.
Excellent body and mind with leisure and endowments will be difficult to obtain repeatedly in the future. Right now, we will accomplish the state of the unsurpassed Samatha Vajra to meaningfully benefit others. Also, it is not certain when the hateful enemy of this present precious body, the Mara of death, will arrive. I and other beings are impermanent, the time of death being uncertain. Since there is no opportunity for happiness wherever one is born in samsara, and since a happy existence was never seen, we will enter the path of nirvana. In order for this body with leisure and wealth to possess meaning, we will abandon the three non-virtuous voiceless afflictions, develop diligence and virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three doors. Going for refuge. Namo Dashanam Kanyam Pesam Shenam Do-dee-ne-so-la-me-jam-ju-ha-chin-la-kandra-la-ma-la-cha-chi Shiva Chandra Damjula Chachi, Soki Shinjo Gendun La Chachi, Trinle Nada Chokyam La Chachi. Namo, from now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Gurus, the source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adams, bestowers of Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Namo. From now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Gurus, the source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adams, the source of Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Generating bodhicitta. Kor-kor-we-san-chan-du-na-dang-yau-shen Shunye Boto Chita Jiki Dati Do Do San Chan Kam Dom Chi San Ye Gong Pong Se De To Pa Cha Te Chi Ro Sa To Je Ning Po Lam La Me Cho Di Ra Be Song May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial towards all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in these unsurpassed teachings, the path of the luminously clear Bhajasas. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind and partial towards all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in these unsurpassed teachings, the path of the luminously clear Vajrasattvas.
Vajrasattva.
Benzasattva samaya amanupalaya Benzasattva tenopa jishtha drito meba Sutakaya mevava, supakaya mevava, anurakta mevava, sarva siddhi me prayaccha, sarva karma sucha me chintam shriyam kuruho, ha 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 ho bhagava, sarva tata gata, vendra vame mucha, vendra vava, mahasaya sato. Om Benza Sata Samaya Manupalaya Benza Sata Tenupa Tishta Drito Mebhava Sintokaya Mebhava Simpokaya Mebhava Anurakta Mebhava Sava Sini Mekrayacha Sava Karma Sucha Mehe Chitam Shriyam Kuruham Aha ha ha ho Bhagavan Sarva tata gata vendra mame musha vendra bhava maha samaya sato Om vendra sata samaya manupalaya vendra sata tenopa tishtha drito me bhava Sutta kaya me bhava supa kaya me bhava Anurakta me bhava sarva siddhi me prayaccha sarva karma sucha me chittam shriyam kuruham aha ha ha ho bhagavan sarva tata gata gandhra mame muncha gandhra bhava maha samaya sato short mandala offering.
Scented waters arranged with flowers adorned with scenery, the four continents as well as the sun and the moon. By offering the visualized Buddha field, may all migrating beings take birth in the pure Buddha field.
Guru Yoga. Om. Ah. Om.
Radhika Dasinkam Su Randanga Mepo Drana Ransa Sawa
palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru. To whom we supplicate with the devoted mind, bless us to accomplish the rainbow body. In the Om Ah Hum, in the Buddha field of one's own originally pure awareness, in the palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru. To whom we supplicate with the devoted mind, bless us to accomplish the rainbow body.
It might just be a class of sneezing, see? Or not. Can I get those two red volumes by Dujon Rinpoche? Mukta Mara Pasha Swavita Muda Mudra Nukutata Sarva Male Pushta Rita Pale Shude Pikansatu Sarva Mara Karma Ni.
So, you all ready for this teaching?
Yes.
Oh, good. This has been requested by Travis, I think months ago. And I said, hold on. So, finally. In terms of this being receiving this transmission, my recollection, I have it written somewhere, but my recollection is I have received it twice with explanations by Ant Rinpoche. So, another one. Again, in an unbroken succession, which is good. I am looking for the, I actually have it printed out, but I'm looking in here for the biography of Princess Pema Sal. Here somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, an introduction to this text. This text is a transmission by Guru Rinpoche, by Padmasambhava, from the 8th century. And it was given to Princess Padma Ledral Sol, the princess of the king of Tibet at the time. And this was her transmission, if you wish. And the way it happened is that she died. She passed away from an illness before she could receive this transmission. And the parents were so overwhelmed with sadness that they asked Guru Rinpoche, I think she was only 8 years old, they asked Guru Rinpoche to revive her, to bring back her life. And he said, okay. But the way he brought back her life is he uttered the seed syllable, HRI, and or ni, sometimes you see text will say ni, NRI, but brought her back just long enough to give her this transmission. Okay? It's pretty cool. Then she passed away. Cool. Parents were still pretty, obviously deeply saddened, but she took rebirth in the 13th century, and known as the treasure name is Padma Ledra Sol, a great treasure revealer. So to make the story fairly short, she's the reincarnation. So we're talking about 1291 to 1315. And he was a great revealer of Dzogchen teachings of Guru Rinpoche. And the primary teachings that he revealed, which are very important to us and very important to people that practice the Yangtze, is what's called the Khandra-Nigtig, the heart bindu of the Dakinis. The Khandra-Nigtig is a very powerful and important tradition. It was practiced by many great masters, but was also practiced by one of the greatest masters of Dzogchen, Longchenpa. And Longchenpa is the rebirth of Princess Pema Sol, and the rebirth of the Tertön in the 13th century called Tertön Pema Ledral Sol. The thing is that the Pema Ledral Sol in the 13th century didn't get to reveal the entire Khandra-Nigtig. So it's for that reason he took rebirth as Longchenpa, the great master Longchenpa. Longchenpa also combined other Dzogchen traditions and created, if you wish, not a new lineage, but an offshoot of the Khandra-Nigtig. The Khandra-Nigtig is the root empowerment, is like the historic mother empowerment for all the Yangtze, even though Yangtze is a complete cycle of teaching, because it's found in the place where the Khandra-Nigtig was revealed, and it has such a close connection to Khandra-Nigtig, and obviously because Rinchen Puntsog of the 16th century was a great master of the Khandra-Nigtig, it's almost like the Yangtze, if you wish, is like a son or a daughter of the Khandra-Nigtig, right? What else can we say here? A few more words about the history of this. Rinchen Puntsog? Yes, Rinchen Puntsog, in a text, on a text that he gives about the order of transmissions of the Khandra-Nigtig, says, he actually gives the story, the background of these instructions of the Khandra-Nigtig. He says, within the completely pure palace of the expanse of reality, there was the Dharmakaya, the completely unestablished primordial purity. And he goes on, and it goes from father, mother, Samantabhadra, and then it went to the Sambhogakaya Vajradhara, and then it went to the Nirmanakaya Vajrasattva, And then the transmission went to the Blazing Fire Mountain charnel ground, where the instructions were taught to Garib Dorje. He's considered like the first human teacher of the Dzogchen traditions. He taught these to the master Sri Simha, and Sri Simha taught these to the great awareness holder Padmakara, or Padmasambhava. So this is the lineage there. It was in the upper cave of Slate Mountain that Guru Rinpoche practiced these instructions from the depths of his heart. Thus, his conditioned physical form was transformed into the unconditioned illusory body, or the pure illusory body, appearing yet without any substantial nature. And to give a bit more detail, although he was invited to Tibet, at that time the period for him to teach the heart bindu instructions as a Kundra Nitig had not come to pass. He also knew that the Pandita Vilomitra would be coming at the abode of Shoto Turdam. That's the place just north of Lhasa. Padmakara taught these to the enlightened female Yeshe Shogal, and she realized this. And then she compiled these words into the instructions of the heart bindu of the Dakinis, arranging them with a catalog, including the mother and child teachings. Then these were sealed with the seal of secrecy. So they were placed in the same cave as the Yangtze teachings. And here we'll give a bit of biography. Guru Rinpoche then went to Chimpu, which we got to visit, which is wonderful. The caves of Chimpu, not so far from Lhasa. And in the Geu Yaogong cave, charnel ground, he went to perform 108 Ganachakra feast offerings. At that time, the king with the queen had a daughter named Latsham Pedrasal, who passed away at the age of 8 years old. And anyways, the Padmakara drew the syllable Nuri with vermilion. Vermilion is a beautiful red dye. It's really good for all, one day for all of you to see what vermilion, pretty close to the color of that red cloth on the shrine, vermilion actually looks like. And he drew it upon her heart center and summoned her conscious back to her body so she could speak and comprehend. And he gave her the secret name, Pema Ledral Sol, and so on. And he told her where she would receive this, and he gave her these instructions. Placing these instructions on the crown of the princess of Turnham, he made the following aspiration. So he made an aspiration that she would take rebirth and reveal this this treasure. And that's really the very brief summary of it. With the very brief lineage. The lineage has been passed in the Yangtze, in the Drikong, and many other lineages unbroken to this day, the Kundra Nitig entire cycle of transmissions. Okay, on to the vast limitless expanse. I think all of you have a copy of the text. Is that right? Yeah, good. Okay. So this is an introduction. It's very brief, but it's very pithy and it's very deep. And for those that can use it, it's an amazing text going right to the heart of liberation to realize Dharmakaya, primordial unmanifest nature. So the text begins, I prostrate, this is Guru Rinpoche, I prostrate to the ultimate expanse of the all-pervasive essence. There really isn't anything in here that's not a pith instruction for practice. For fortunate ones to enter the path, the oral instructions, the vital points are taught. This has two parts, cutting through and direct crossing. Today and tomorrow, only the transmission of cutting through or trecho will be taught. Cutting through, number one. In the same way that all phenomena of appearances and existence are unconfined. So every time, I'm going to give you some advice, which you may take to heart. I find it very useful. If you're going to practice with this, you could make another copy if you wish, but what I often do is I underline the emphasis the teacher makes on certain words. And you can see how in here are embedded the actual qualities of the Dharmakaya and the actual qualities of the space of awareness that you're trying to discover. So you have to have a level of very deep trust and confidence that Guru Rinpoche and the revealer of this treasure, Tertön Pema Sol, know exactly what they're talking about, have the highest realization, and therefore the words they're using, and by the way, the translator is a very good translator. He's a very good translator, and he studies with many, a great eminent lamas, and this is a good translation. So when you see a word like unconfined, I would underline that or star it. And the reason being is that's exactly what you want to discover. Not because you're imagining it, not because you're making a story about it, but you know where you're heading. And unconfined is exactly correct. Beautiful description. Unconfined, unbound, and so on. And then you have another one, and unrestricted. All these are Dzogchen terms. So if you turn, I don't know if you received the Tibetan. Did you receive the Tibetan in the back? Perhaps not.
But yes.
Yes? Okay, so one time maybe what I'll do is we'll go through and actually underline the Tibetan and bring out all these terms. That'd be a wonderful, deeper study and teaching of this would be to go through and bring out all the translations of these key terms he's using. I could look them up on my computer, but it'd take too long. But these are key words. So we have unrestricted, the meaning of their primordially pure essence is uncontrived. There's another one. And primordially free. There's another one. And another one, free from exertion. So we have a number of terms here that are so essential in one's practice or non-practice, because this is really, in a sense, it's practice but non-practice. You have to have a calm, clear, lucid mind that's able to dwell relatively, most of the time, thought-free, very awake, looking, seeing, and uncovering these experiences. If confident realization in one's mind stream has not been attained, that one means we don't have complete realization or full, very deep realization, then it is meaningless. Yeah? All this is meaningless. However, the instructions are given for those that wish to take on this beautiful quick path of liberation. It says in the Luminous Expanse, the Tantra Luminous Expanse, quote, the dharmas of the vehicles are complete in essence. The essence is the meaning of all the dharmas. Without that, words and such become meaningless. So the concepts that are used in Dzogchen are meaningless unless one takes them to heart. So I'm kind of remembering the words of Ajahn Rinpoche here. It kind of comes back. It's beautiful. If you don't take the meaning to heart and practice, really give yourself a chance, then you'll always be wondering what the authentic teaching is. You'll always be wondering if there's a deeper meaning, if there's some text, some book newly published, which is wonderful. They're great books by Shambhala or Wisdom Publications. Which new book will give me the new clear revelation? But I actually, if you trust, this is enough. Because you'll see if you just hold your mind and let your mind relax and really go at it, you will see that these are the key qualities of the Dharmakaya, of the experience of one's natural mind. So, this is what that means. You're looking for the meaning of all dharmas. You're looking for the essence. You're looking for that all the teachings of dharma, all 84,000 teachings of dharma, of all the dharma vehicles, are absolutely complete in their essence. Therefore, he says, the introduction to the meaning of the ground, of cutting through, just as it is very important. So it's really good for all of you who are deep practitioners to, from time to time, request pith instructions of cutting through, of Mahamudra, from one's heartfelt teachers, so that we keep remembering what the very essence is, even if we do other practices that aren't pointing directly to it. Number 1.1, cutting the roots of thoughts. From the completely non-established empty essence, there's another one, non-established, completely non-established empty essence of the mind. If there's a position that you're still taking, if there's some aspect that you're still holding, some dark recess of your mind that there's a holding onto, then it's not completely non-established. In other words, non-established is you can't pinpoint the empty essence. And yet you know. Is that beautiful? Someone says to you, what is the empty essence? And then when you go to a teacher and say, when a teacher asks you, what's the empty essence? You go, fuck, get back to work. Okay. Various forms of radiance arise subtly. There you go. Now we're almost straying into Togyo. But from this empty, open mind, if you look carefully and see carefully, you'll begin to see various forms of radiance arising subtly. Usually what you see first are pure lights. And sometimes, if you see, look very, very carefully, you'll see the pure lights are lights like you've never seen light before. Ever seen light. Subtly. If it's really powerful light, you know, if you have the experience of a 500-watt light bulb in your dark room turning on, and there's no 500-watt light bulb, or from the inside too. This is called the lesser light. This more subtle light of the subtle light of the central channel, subtle light of the awareness mind, can be so subtle unless your mind is highly refined. Since the union of emptiness and luminosity is not understood, one becomes attached to self-grasping in one's mind stream. In other words, when you don't know the empty, luminous nature of thoughts or emotions or things like that, then you grasp to those, not this subtle, pure awareness, which you don't grasp to because you can't grasp to. So he's telling you actually how it works. How clinging works is that one focuses on concepts instead of the inherent natural awareness, which is always present. That's what he means by not understood. And as soon as we grasp to concepts and forget the vast awareness, we are then grasping at straws. Thus one wanders in cyclic existence. All right? amazing teaching. I mean, it's really just, it's cutting through, just cuts through every bit of nonsense and paraphernalia and stories one could ever have. And it's good for all of you to hear this, no matter where you're at, no matter where we're at in Dharma, for Westerners, I believe, it's very important not to wait to hear this, because I believe every one of you, if you can't have the experience at this moment, although you may have some, even intellectually or feeling, you can feel all of this. You can feel this. This is great. It says in the Liberation of Wearing Tantra, that'd be a wonderful transmission to give to sometime, the root of existence, the root of bhava, the root of becoming, is self-grasping itself. And then you say, but where's self-grasping coming from? You don't have to know. Isn't that beautiful? Where's all this coming from? You don't actually have to know. When a drowning man or woman, or boy or girl, is drowning, they don't ask the questions, I wonder where this grasping after life comes from. They don't do that. They're going to reach out for the nearest thing that they can grab onto. As for cutting the root, cutting the very basis of self-grasping, underlying all the activities of beings, that's what you're going for. Without thinking too much about it, you're going in to the very heart of the forest and cutting down the biggest tree that is holding everything up. Okay? Don't be scared about that. It's extremely beautiful. That's why we build strength. We build muscles. As for cutting the root, the single root, underlying all the activities of beings, there is other basis besides body, speech, and mind. Therefore, of this body, speech, and mind, which is the one that wanders in cyclic existence below? What is wished for in wishing for the attainment of Buddhahood above? So, wandering in cyclic existence below means basically in the three lower realms, wandering around in hell realms, wandering around in hungry ghost realms. You know, hungry ghost realms, maybe not all of you know hungry ghosts. You ever felt the hungry ghost? Hungry ghosts can never be satisfied. You have breakfast, and then you have another breakfast. And you go, I need another breakfast. And actually, now I'm ready for another breakfast. It's kind of like a teenager or something like that. But a hungry ghost is never satisfied with mental, physical food, even if they get ideas. Oh, can I have more? Can I have more? Can I have more? Can I have more? So then we have the animal realm, and then we have above, we have human, godlike, and of course, Buddhahood, which is outside of the six realms. What acts as the support for all happiness and suffering? So in the words of Alta Rinpoche, which was so beautiful to hear one day when he started to teach Lotashi Namjol's Mahamudra text, is he said, before we begin, I'll never forget this, before we begin, we've got to get something clear about the Dharma. The Dharma is not about being happy, and it's not about being sad. It's about liberation. So Let's start with that beautiful instruction. Contrary to much of how the Dharma gets taught these days, we're not looking for happiness, relative happiness. We're not looking for relative sadness. We're actually going for liberation. Will you get happier? Oh, for sure. Will it wash off on you? For sure. Do body, speech, and mind act individually, or do they act as a group? So these are questions that are found in Dzogchen Mahamudra and tantric manuals for practice, which are the analytic type of investigations that you would do to go, well, where's the grasping coming from? Is it coming from my speech? Is it coming from my head? Is it coming from my heart? Is it coming from other people? Other people make me grasp. And so he's going through the kinds of standard questions that one would ask to cut through analytically to the root. So for instance, where is the support for happiness and suffering? Where am I going to find that? So you look. What do you think you find?
Is there a word missing in this first sentence?
Yes.
Should yes. be no other basis?
Yeah. Although I like other basis too, because that can work.
There is other basis?
No, so we're gonna hold off on that. I actually have another text where I have that note about that. Normally it's given as other basis. What other basis is there? Yeah. Do you have another base? So that's another thing too, is some of the questions is, can you find a different base than body, speech, and mind? What's the basis for grasping? What's the basis for freedom? Okay. Do body, speech, and mind act individually, or do they act as a group? By investigating analytically, one will resolve that the root agent is what? The mind. Now, this is precious. This is beautiful. If you listen to you yourself and others in dialogue, how many times does a speech place the root of happiness and sadness on something else than the only possible place that this can happen is mind? Isn't that cool? I find that the most exciting, momentous, philosophical, experiential discovery of all time. And I'm not exaggerating. You just go to sit in the philosophy classes at university like this, after you've had teaching like this. I mean, you got to do the exams, you got to pass, but it's like, so you develop great patience. It's mind. There's only one possibility. It's mind. Mind. There's no other possibility. This would drive me crazy. Anyways. So, underline that. Underline that line. By investigating, the only thing that's possible to come to for any logical, normal being is that there is no other agent acting than mind. Yeah? Even if someone's driving you nuts, it's mind. Doesn't matter if it's them, you, combination of them, you, place, environment, time, physiology, it just doesn't matter. It's still mind, because there's only one place or one scope. I don't even like the word place, not location. There's only one sphere of activity, mind. Okay, it says in the luminous expanse, Tantra, there is one sole ground of cyclic existence and beyond. You're not going to find another ground. Not cool? Even if you were to go into retreat for 3 months, shall I give you a practice? Go into retreat for 3 months and wander around the 400 acres looking for the ground. You know what I mean? Where's the ground? Where's the ground? It's like mandal offering. Satchi, Purj, or when you're doing it. Om Benzara Bhumi Ahong, the 37 mandal offering. You're laying out the diamond ground. Where is the diamond ground? Where is the diamond ground? You're asking it over and over and over again. There is one sole ground of cyclic existence, samsara, and transcendent. There's only, whether there is freedom, whether there's liberation or no liberation, there's only one ground. This is a really important point, because so many practitioners are looking for a place called nirvana. They're looking for a sphere, a mind, they're looking for something. called nirvana. There isn't. Nirvana means freedom, means the actual nature of the mind. Number 1.2, finding the secret of mind. Now, if the agent is the mind, then before the ground of mind was divided into cyclic existence and beyond, what mind wandered in cyclic existence in the beginning? Now he's doing it again. Who makes it? You know, some people do this. They'll go, you know, put up like in the middle of a Dharma class. So like, who made all of this? Where was the origin of all the suffering? So they're not going to look at themselves. So like, when did suffering really start in the universe? Was it 13 billion years ago or 16 billion years ago? Or was it last week? Where did all this happen? And who's making it? So we get to creator. We get to the idea of a creator. So these are all things that Guru Rinpoche, another text, demolished step by step by step. And we did that in the Bodhicitta Vivarana. Is who creates all this? Ever had that feeling? Ever had that feeling as a teenager or something like that? I know I did. Who's doing all this?
Mm-hmm. My parents?
No, it's not my parents. What's in control of everything? Yeah. So, who makes it? If one likewise investigates the existence of wandering, one will find that it cannot be found anywhere. So if you say, oh, Lama, I have a wandering mind. Where? Where is your wandering mind? My mind is so busy. Where? What do you mean where? Where? Where's it busy? Where's it wandering to? Where is it wandering from? Where did it come from? But it is. Are you so sure? So, if you keep looking, you will discover, I would take that to heart, but you have to find it, that you will not find it anywhere. It says in the Garland of Pearls Tantra, in the primordial purity of the beginning itself, not even the name of confusion exists. Likewise, how could there be non-confusion? Therefore, confusion is pure from the very beginning. All this confusion that goes on around here, goes around there, goes around here and there and there and there and there, is absolutely pure. But it sure creates havoc.
Okay? The appearance of havoc.
Hmm?
It creates illusory havoc.
It doesn't, no. A conceptual mind does. So you have to come out of that. Confusion is not creating any problems. Only a conceptual mind gets confused about the confusion. Only a conceptual mind gets confused about non-confusion. Right now, there's no confusion. Anywhere. And there's no non-confusion anywhere. Because if there's non-confusion, it means it's like nirvana, which is like a thing. And you think maybe this is semantics. No, you have to actually really find this. There is never been any confusion. Can you say relatively there's confusion? Yes, we had confusion over the time of class. We had the confusion over what someone said. But actually, there's no confusion in there. The mind has no confusion. Only the grasping onto concepts has confusion. You say, well, why should we grasp anything? If we don't grasp, we wouldn't have shoes. If we don't grasp, we wouldn't be wearing any clothes. If we didn't grasp, we wouldn't even be sitting here. And that's actually useful. If we don't grasp, we'll have no vaccine for COVID. Right? And more people will die. Not such a good idea. However, ultimately, and actually what's happening right now, what we need to do is find out where there's no confusion nor non-confusion. Remembering that the samsaric mind always wants a yes or no answer. Just feel it. Just feel it. The mind that wanders and is confused always wants black or white. This or that, up or down, and will always go for a position. Always. Whereas an awake mind will go for a position but knows there's no position. There's no confusion. Number 1.3. Investigating, arising, abiding, and going. In that way, the secret of the ground is not found. Unlike many texts and teachings, you will find the ground. They're telling you, go find the ground. Go find the one thing. Have you ever seen that in teachings? You know, like I think there's books like that. The one thing. The one place. The one secret. The one answer. You know? The one place where it's all secure. The right food. The right food for everybody. You know, it'd be great if the government of Canada finally puts out the nutritional requirements perfect for all Canadians, which they do, right? What would happen if it could never be done? It can't be done, which is so cool. Anyways, they're guidelines. It's not fair. They know that now. They're guidelines. So you're not going to find the ground, but obviously we wouldn't be doing this unless one finds something. Still, one should investigate the duration, this root of clinging, to cyclic existence beyond. How long does clinging last for? Let's see a show of hands. Let's do like a vote. Does clinging last 24 hours? Does a clinging cluster, like you can define and say this is clinging, last 24 hours? Let's see a show of hands. Anybody? It lasts without break 24 hours. There's no break in the clinging at all, 24 hours. Let's see, anybody? Yes? No? Okay, 20 hours. No? Don't see any show of hands. Anybody in Zoom, 20 hours? No? Okay. 15 hours. Oh, sorry, 15 isn't really a very good Buddhist word. Very good Buddhist number. 12 hours. 12 hours of complete, unbroken clinging. Never changes. It's just pure clinging. No? No hands going up. Okay. 1 hour. 1 hour of unmitigated clinging. So that's what you do. You look to it and say, what is this clinging and how long does it last for? You look. And I think you'll see when your mind is really clear and lucid, when you look at the clinging, you look at the clinging, not the object, the clinging. You may not even find it. You might go, this was a conjuring trick. The clinging was a conjuring trick. So you can go further and further and further until you can't even find a millisecond of clinging. Where does it arise in the outer vessel? That is the outer vessel experience. The inner vessel, or the inner contents. Inner contents is in us, the feeling of us. Outer, inner, upper, or lower body. So again, this is analytic, slightly analytic meditation. These are classic questions a teacher will ask you when you practice Dzogchen or Mahamudra. So if you're clinging, where is it? Is it your right shoulder? Is it your left knee? Is it in your belly, your heart? Oh, the clinging's in my heart. So there's no clinging in your knee. Oh, it must mean my whole body's clinging. Well, we'll go take a look. Oh, no, it's not true. So you keep chasing it around and eventually. See? Could you find sensation in your body? Yes. Is sensation clinging? Let's see a show of hands. How many people in the room would say that a sensation is clinging? Is that a yes or no? How many people would put their hand and say, yes, when I have a sensation, that's clinging. I need a very long stick. So, watch. If that hurts, if it did, would that be clinging? Would the sensation be clinging? Let's see a show of hands. Yes? If you get an itch or scratch, is that clinging?
No.
It's a sensation. Pleasurable, unpleasurable, or neutral is not clinging. It's simply a sensation. What's clinging?
My itch.
Hmm?
My itch.
My itch. The concept of itch. But the sensation has no clinging. But I don't believe that everybody believes that in the room, because we certainly don't exhibit that. Is that right? And yet, does it make any sense? Your pains and pleasures and neutrality have no clinging whatsoever. You can't find them there. You can only find a concept that's clinging to a concept. What is the root born from? Where does it abide now, and where is it likewise based? In the end, where does it go? If it was clinging, where's the clinging hiding? Have you asked that? Let's say you go through some emotional jumble. Then you go, okay, so where's it hiding for the next time? What most people who were born in the West say? It's hiding where?
In your brain.
Whoever told you that?
Someone,
exactly. So you bought that in school or whatever, but is that true? Does it actually hide away in your brain? Are there actually thoughts that are actually thoughts sitting in your brain ready to come out? What do you think? Is there an entire Porsche sitting in your brain? What do you think?
I hope so.
I hope not for you, because we'll have to open your brain if you really want it. But there's no other place the Porsche is. Make any sense? It is, if you just think about it and look, it is preposterous, some of the ideas that and concepts, which are, by the way, very deeply rooted concepts that we operate by all the time. They're extremely deep. Where is the clinging sitting? Nowhere. One thus will come to understand the meaning of changeless, free from a root. There you go. Changelessness, free from a root. Go take a look. Good. Underline that. Changelessness, free from a root. Give me an example. If you take a piece of potato, like a root, a piece of potato, and grow and put it in the soil or put it in water. Ever done that? What happens? Sometimes.
It sprouts.
It sprouts. So, is the ground, is the root, unyielding? Is it fixed? No, the root gives birth to infinite possibilities. It can even rot. It can even get a fungal infection or viral infection, just rot away. Changelessness, free from root. What's changing? So there's another one to look for. What's changing? So let's use a common example. We walk outside and go, look at the trees change. Makes perfect sense, right? Look at all these trees around us changing. Were they never not changing? Or were they always changing? What would you say? Logical beings who study biology and observe things? Are those trees always changing?
Yes.
Yes. And when are they changing? Is a change only because of the color? When do we say that something changes?
When we notice it.
Right. But if we go and we look carefully and we spend all day long with the tree, its nature is always changing, right? always, it's never anything but changing. Yeah? But that's not really getting at. The mind that's aware of the tree, is it changing its nature? That's the key question. Okay? And that's what he's pointing to. Changelessness free from a root. So if you take up the object, you'll say the object is changing, but here we're looking for the awareness that experiences all phenomena. And is the experience that experiences all phenomena changing or changeless? This is it. Okay? It's free from a root. It says in the Liberation of Wearing Tantra, outer and inner conceptual labeling is primordially liberated emptiness. Outer and inner conceptual labeling is primordially liberated emptiness. So, how could you practice that? It's very easy. You, as we've done here before, and explained before, you can say your name out loud. If you have a fixation to your name and who you are, just call it out loud until it crumbles. Right? Take anything and hold it up for examination long enough and you'll see it's just made up in the mind. So it gets its primordial liberated emptiness. There are no conceptual labels other than liberated emptiness, self-liberated. It's always been liberated. So you have to find that. You have to test it out. You see, a reason for going into retreat. This is very hard to do in a busy life. In that way, one then investigates the consciousness itself. There we go, you see? Investigates the awareness itself. That does the investigating and examining. So this is where we get trapped. We get trapped in the objects without looking at the nature of the looking, of the looker. Not the witness. That's a construct. The witness, the whole thing about a witness, invented by, I don't know who, but the witness, is that you end up making the witness, as I've heard, people have said, I've been meditating on the witness now for 10 years. I'm shocked. I'm like absolutely shocked. So now you're meditating on a thing that you've been told about that exists for 10 years. There is no witness. All you have to do is just go look for the witness and you'll see there's no witness. Can't find a witness. Was it useful for a week? Yes. Was it useful for a few days? Was it useful for a month? Yes, actually. And it's a very common experience to see that there's actually a witnesser to the phenomena that one's having. But my goodness, if someone doesn't direct you to look at the witnesser and see it has no fundamental nature, you could be in that for 10, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years of your life thinking you're on the right track. So you have to investigate the awareness, the consciousness itself that's doing the investigation. However, since its nature is not established, you can't find its definitive qualities. Not even an atom can be found. So you get to develop confidence in this. If you look at your awareness, is it a thing? How many people in the room would say awareness is a thing? A self-existing thing. In other words, awareness is here? Nope. Awareness is... watch. There. Awareness is here? Nope. Awareness is under there. Awareness is found in a Dharma book. Let's say you open up a really great Dharma text like this one. This is fantastic. Unbelievable work. Great master. Good luck getting through it. Is awareness here?
It's on the other page.
Right, okay. Yeah, thanks. I knew that. Yeah, I knew that. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Where is it? So if you do that long enough, hopefully it leads to real penetrative insight. Can you find even an atom of awareness? pardon the pun, by likewise seeing that the empty nature is also free from a root. In other words, the empty nature is not a thing, it's not a concept. It too, empty nature, it so too is free from root. Self-grasping is liberated in its own place. Now that's Sogchen. Okay, also Mahamudra. That's the point. As soon as you really see that, you'll see that any kind of grasping or clinging is self-liberated. It's just liberated. It has to be liberated. It's unrooted. Yeah? You've taken the chainsaw or the axe, it's now been dug up. That's all. That's how it works. You have to see its nature, not its thingness. It won't be uprooted. As soon as awareness has a concept, or things have a concept, it can't be uprooted. It just finds another place where it has another day to sprout. You see what I mean? It will just come up again. The only way it can be dissolved is to actually see its nature. What's its nature? It has no ground, has not even an atom of firmament. Therefore, it's liberated in its own place. Why? Because it already is liberated. In that way, the root of self-grasping is liberated in its own place. Discursive thoughts, which are the root of the existence of subject and object, are also liberated in their own place. So therefore, you don't have to get rid of discursive thoughts, you have to cut the root of discursive thought. The root of discursive thought. Where's the root of discursive thought? Only possible place is mind's nature. There's no other place you can cut. You can't do it. Okay. I have it. If we had a giant oak tree, sitting just over on the other side of the main house over there, a giant oak tree, and it needed to be cut because it's old and it could fall on the main house and damage or kill people in the main house. Something that we do quite often on Galliano. Lots of trees, they get older, we gotta cut them down. Would you start cutting the tree down by finding a rootlet over at Tarakan? Wise people, oh wise ones. Would you say that that would be an intelligent, insightful, direct way to take care of the tree, is we're going to cut one of the tiny little rootlets that we trace that's at the Tara cabin or at the temple? What would you say to that? Or maybe the hermitage? Jeff, would that be a good way to... How about, you know, a little rootlet here and a little rootlet here, and maybe we take a branch off here, and we take a couple leaves off here. What would you say to that? No. The only way to do it would be to take it down from the root. In the case of arbutus trees, we have arbutus trees on the West Coast. There's not a big range of them, but arbutus trees, which appear like trees, and they are trees, they're classified as trees. When we take an arbutus tree down, guess what happens?
It grows back.
It grows back, shoots come up, right from the cut trunk. And sometimes we see a tree's broken and fallen, and there's still, even though it's been cut, there's now shoots coming out. So cool. So, and in a not very, a really quick time, those shoots coming out of that trunk, right at the base, it's been cut, they're going like this, are going to become trees. So, we see in the case of arbutus, we have to actually cut the trunk. Sorry, we have to cut the root. Okay, and it says here, for example, if the, one more line I missed here, in that way the root of self-grasping is liberated from its own place, discursive thoughts, I've read that, which are the root of the existence of a subject and object, are also liberated in their own place. Therefore, we don't have to go chasing after thoughts after a certain point, we don't have to settle the thoughts, we need to cut to the root. For example, if the root of a tree is cut, the leaves on the trunk automatically become dry, they wither. It says in the scriptures, that means they don't remember where, which text it was, but they do remember it. Imagine how much memorization used to happen long ago. Imagine just volumes and volumes and volumes. It happens in these texts too, where they go, they quote something, but they don't say where it came from. That's because there's a lot of texts that get memorized. If one knows that the ground of all is completely pure, the manifest meaning of the ground is liberated in its own place. This is a very key instruction. You want to look for the purity without conceptual contrivance. You want to look for the purity underlying thought or no thought. Sangye, purity, utter purity. You want to look for that which is stainless, and it has a quality not of dullness or of empty, but really very beautiful. There's a beautiful nature of the awareness that is the ground of confusion and non-confusion, thoughts and so on, anger and not anger and everything else. .4, introducing discursive thoughts as mind. So it says, you'll see it says introducing. That means that you are being introduced by both the Lama in their description and by the text as a support. Number 1.4, introducing discursive thoughts as the mind. A big jump for many people. This is a huge jump. Even for many people who've been practicing for years and years and years, they still don't believe or still haven't got that the thoughts are mind. These wild thoughts of the self-energy of awareness, another Dzogchen term, self-energy of awareness, are called mind. That's what we call, when you ask someone, say, what is mind? They say, I have a mind. If they tell you what a mind is, they're describing the energetic awareness of mind, but not mind. Like all the display of the mind. Within the way of this arising awareness of self-appearances, all gross, subtle, and unidentified thoughts are subsumed. They all fit into that. Furthermore, the vivid awareness and emptiness essence is traceless. So, you'll say that then one says, okay, we're not talking about thoughts, we're talking about mind essence. No, we're talking about thoughts. Where do the thoughts arise from? Mind. The arising awareness of self-appearances. These appearances are none other than mind. If you look into a mirror, or if you look into a pond, and you look in there, are you seeing yourself, your face of yourself, or are you seeing the face reflected in the water? Make sense? There's no other place where thoughts or feelings or emotions occur but in the reflections of mind. Make sense? So how would you ever really become confident? All of you. How would you become confident then?
Continuing to be aware of that.
Over and over and over. So you should know that there's very few individuals in the history of Dharma practice who've had this experience once and it was finished. Just so you know that. So if you want to have a little glimpse and say, I'm finished now, you're dealing with a crapshoot. Like you're playing against the casino, you're not going to win. So the masters of old, masters even today, they spend a lot of time in this, even if they know it, and they've experienced it, a lot of time until it becomes incredibly a stable experience. Traceless. So I'd underline traceless. Traceless. What's traceless? Thoughts. What's traceless? Even awareness. What's traceless? All self appearances. What's traceless? Vivid awareness. All traceless. Tracks? Can anybody find the tracks? Bring me the tracks. When next time you have a thought, bring me the tracks. You know, if you have thoughts, don't they make a track through the sky of your mind? Is that correct? Who in the room would say that when you have a thought or feeling or emotion, it leaves a track through the sky of the mind? What you say? So you go look. Because some people told me, yes, it does. It leaves down a memory trace. And there's like a clear path, and you can trace it back. Is that memory? Is that what we call confabulation or construction? Or is that a real experience? What's the real experience? Where's the track? It is self-arising. Where does it arise from? Not the self. Self-arising. Is that cool? Just think of the name, meaning of that. Think of this. Think of the experience. To self-arise means it has no origin. Isn't that cool? Where did this book come from? What'd you say? Where did this book come from? You're going to look at the title. Oh, it's Wisdom Publications. So did it come from Wisdom Publications? What'd you say? It came from Wisdom Publications? Did it come from Dzogchen Rinpoche? Did it come from all the lineage masters all the way to the time of the Buddha? Did it appear in my hand because I asked for it? Does that make any sense? I asked for it? Or did you ask for it? Who asked for the text? It's also good for weightlifting.
It came from a whole lot of different conditions and...
How many?
Can you count them? You can't count them.
So what is this arising right now?
It's mind arising.
It's mind. Infinite cause and conditions. Is it happening right now? When? Right now? No. Not even happening now. What's happening? No, that was past. It's happening right now. Go on. Only thing we can say is unestablished. Yes.
So when you say something has infinite countless... causes or conditions, is that kind of like saying it has no causes or conditions? It just
has no definitive cause and conditions. It's interdependent. It's empty. It isn't a thing. It's an appearance in the mind born of infinite causes and conditions. It is absolutely empty. Why? It's the nature of lucid infinite mind. That's all it is. Just take a look. There's no book. Is there a book here? Is there a book here? Anybody see a book? What do you see? Let's do this real quick. What do you see when I say, here's the book?
A book.
But are you seeing a book?
See a concept of a book.
No, even just let's be even more ordinary.
Red.
You see a red thing, right? You go, book. It could be anything. It could be a present. It could be wrapped up. It could be a box. It could have nothing. It could be no words in it whatsoever. If this red object, and Adam says awareness is found over here. I think, it's
the
other page, yeah, over here, right, this page. So Adam says on this page. Imagine opening the book and it's just pages, blank pages. Would you say it's a book? Denise, you're a book publisher. I need an official answer. You are an official, you're a real book publisher. If this book lands in your lap and you open it up and someone says, I want you to read my book. What would you say? Book or no book?
No.
No book. Could you sell a book like this with blank pages? Come on, Denise.
In a different store.
Even had a French title on it.
Okay.
Could you sell this?
No.
But could it be called a book? Would some people call this a book?
Yeah.
Why?
Because of the form.
The form. And what's the form? It's an imaginary concept. Is that right? Could it be a sketchbook? Could it be a flotation device? Could it be used for napkins? It could be anything. Great napkins. However, because it is a precious Dharma text, I would not recommend that. Traceless. So how do you find tracelessness? You have to look at the awareness, not the concept. You have to stay in the sphere of luminous awareness or spacious awareness until luminosity comes out long enough to really get it. That nothing that comes into the mind, into the sphere of the mind, is none other than the empty, luminous nature. Doesn't matter. So you have to exhaust your mind. Do you know what I mean by that? You have to exhaust the conceptual mind until it falls. That's liberation. It has to fall. Literally, fall. The mass has to fall. Oh yeah, okay. That's real. Okay, it's not anymore. That's real. No, it's not. Oh, I just had a feeling. That's real. No, it's not. So you have to do it long enough until the mass of delusion falls or pops open. Okay? Otherwise, it's a glimpse. It's a concept. It's a feeling. I think I know what they mean. Right? But it actually has to land. And then how do you know if it's really definitive? Months and months and months go by, and that hasn't shifted. Okay. There's a question.
So, awareness is everywhere.
Don't know. I wouldn't say so.
But the difficulty is...
I wouldn't say it's everywhere.
But if you say that, mm-hmm. then you've then made awareness a thing.
That's right.
And that's the difficulty.
If you go before a teacher and say, I have discovered that awareness is everywhere, they should really nail you. But then if you said, I've discovered awareness is everywhere, very good. It all depends on your experience. You say, awareness is boundless. Oh, you're saying awareness is boundless consciousness. Absorption. So is it? Could you ever have awareness that is boundless? It's a thing. But I would never say it's not. I wouldn't say it is.
Yeah.
It's traceless. So this is Ajahn. This is Ajahn. Out of the form and formless absorptions into the intrinsic nature. What's the intrinsic nature? Traceless. It is self-arising and self-liberated. Remember, this is the key. Everything's already liberated. Therefore, you get the instruction later, don't do anything. Which is what everybody's doing. And sometimes a teacher will tell you, hopefully, many, many years later, maybe, stop doing. I'm going to do this meditation. Why? I once had someone who told me, a wonderful practitioner, wonderful, wonderful practitioner, so many retreats. I said, you're off for a while. I said, yeah. I'm going to do a million, I think I'm going to do a million prostrations. Why? What are you going to find? He looked at me. Huh? What are you going to find? In a million prostrations, what are you going to find? You've already done like 400,000. What are you going to find more in a million? Why that? Bloody good teacher, bloody good practitioner. Interesting, eh? What are you really going to find? A thing called prostration? A definitive experience called the prostration? Possibly. Hopefully more like tracelessness or traceless. It is self-arising and self-liberated already. It does not pass beyond the luminous empty essence. There's nothing to liberate. All you folks here are trying to become free and liberated. Isn't that right? Put your hand up. Let's see. Yeah? Yeah, that's good. No? No? Yeah, I want to be liberated. Yes, good. But there's the beautiful thing about the Dharma is you all want to be liberated, but there's nothing to liberate. And that's okay, because that's the discovery. But if you don't actually strive for liberation of bodhicitta, you won't make the discovery that there's actually no thing to have ever liberated. Every bit of experience is already free. It's unconstrained. You know, you get things, oh, we'll never be able to do this. Well, this will never happen. Oh, we can't do this. We can't do that. Never. Of course it is. It's already free. It's free. I can never make $1 million. Why not? I could never go to Antarctica. Why not? I could never go to India. Why not? Because I don't have any money. Why not? Bound, 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 right? Fixation. But there's nothing binding. But then again, you may say, why do that? There might actually be no purpose in doing it. Okay. It is like waves moving in the ocean or a breeze moving in the sky. That's all. Is that sound going to be with us? Whatever that sound is out there apparently on the road, is it going to be with us all day? What do you think? Do we have to worry about it? You know, if you're the beaver down cabin and you're really quiet and there for a while, you'll hear trucks on 121, 8 kilometers away. It is like waves moving in the ocean. Are you going to do it? Are you going to try to sail the entire ocean all the time? Imagine retreatants saying, I'm going to settle the ocean. Or how about you're meditating at Beaver Dam Cabin? Have you all been to Beaver Dam Cabin? I hope so. And you're meditating at Beaver Dam Cabin. You're sitting, we used to have a platform outside looking over the water there. And so every time the water gets disturbed, you're going to, like Dorje Drolo, I am going to make it settle. It will settle. No disturbances on the lake or pond or marsh or swamp. I will make it settle. It will no longer be settled. What do you think? What do you think? Is that madness? Is that a definition of like madness? It's crazy. I can imagine trying to do that for an entire retreat.
I will make one myself.
Until it settles. And what's going to happen? Anybody ever try that? Come on, we've all tried it, right? Come on, admit it. We all tried to do something stupid like that, right? What happens about 2 minutes later or 30 seconds later?
It's settled.
Is that right?
That's why we keep coming back.
I know, and I'm trying to get you never to come back. Try to get rid of all the students. Isn't that amazing job description? You know, like if you had a job, right? Imagine. You know, other jobs you want more and more and more practitioners, right? But here it is, like I want to get rid of you. I never want to ever see you ever again. Can you imagine? Is that a great kind of, what do you think? Travis, is that a good business model?
No.
I never want to see you ever, ever again. You just write to me, traceless, trackless, gone beyond. Hallelujah. What a crazy business model is, eh? Come on, get rid of them. Finish them off. Okay. It is like waves moving in the ocean or a breeze moving in the sky. Why do you want so badly to stop the breeze? Why do you so badly want to stop the waves in the pond? When all you have to do is see its empty nature, it's both settled and unsettled. It has no, whether it's settled or unsettled, it doesn't even matter. then you have this tranquility, this effortless tranquility, this beyond tranquility. It's called the union of samatha and vipassana. Okay? You don't have to try because it's either settled or non-settled, and it doesn't matter. It's the empty, luminous essence that matters. It's the tracelessness that matters, whether it's thoughts or no thoughts. What do thoughts disturb? What are thoughts agitating? Physiology. Just sit there. Sensation, sensation, sensation. Another sensation. Okay. It says in the luminous expanse, the mental activity from mind is the energy of awareness. There it is. There's the instruction. Go look at the energy of the awareness. Sal. Rang sal. Energy of awareness. All appearances and consciousness are pure. Go find it. Go make it definitive. There's nothing other than awareness. No, there's nothing other than pure awareness. Please, this is dangerous. There's nothing other than pure, empty, lucid awareness, not awareness. Because today people are saying, oh, just meditate on your awareness. Don't meditate on your awareness, please. That's like saying, I'm going to meditate on me. I'm meditating on me. I'm meditating on my thoughts. I'm meditating on my awareness. No, you don't want to meditate on conditioned awareness. You want to meditate on the pure, undifferentiated, traceless awareness. And that's what that means. It's become very dangerous. I've seen teachings where it says, yeah, all you need to do is just meditate on your awareness. So easy. Just look at your awareness. It's that simple. No, it's not. Because you're not actually looking for awareness, you're looking for traceless awareness. You're looking for empty, luminous awareness, not the waves. Then eventually you look at the waves, you see, oh, it's the same thing. And let's see where we'll finish today. We're getting pretty close. How many pages? I'll go one more page or so. 1.5, introducing the mind as emptiness. These are all introductions, right? And could actually, this entire text could be taught as a 3-6 month, 1 year retreat, 2 year, 3 year retreat, where you don't go any further than the introduction until it becomes really clear and definitive. So each is a step-by-step introduction, and they conform to the same stages as Mahamudra. So people say, oh, you know, Dzogchen is sudden. This is the same stages as Mahamudra. Same introduction, same way of introducing. It can be gradual for those that can be gradual. It can be gradual for those that need gradual. It is sudden for those that can just have it. The whole five empowerments can be launched at once or sequentially. Make sense? And sometimes it's all at once. Sometimes it's sequential. It just depends where we're at on a given day, given instant. 1.5, introducing the mind as emptiness. In that way, the elaborating mind, okay, underline elaborating mind. There's a stage of insight in the 16 stages of insight in the Southeast Asian tradition where one finally gets sick, vomits, throws up, trembles with fear over the direct experience of the constructive, elaborating, karmic mind. All right? However, that elaborating mind, that proliferation mind, that constructing mind does not exist from the ground up. There's not even one atom. Not one single atom of existence. By likewise investigating, the essence which is taught also does not have a basis. That's like saying there's no shunyata. Can you imagine someone saying there's no shunyata? Imagine you study for all those years, you go to Buddhist school, You know, it's like going to Sunday school in Judaism, yeah, or let's say Catholic Sunday school, and you've been going for like 8 years, or you're now in, you know, university. So today, we introduce the most important point of your life. There's no God. This is very similar. Just take God away. Imagine if you took God away from all that. Just took it away. You gotta be kidding. This is what it's doing. Okay. Even the essence does not have a basis. Even though the examples of mere luminosity and mere awareness appear, it is without example. So, for instance, when we say that it's just like the waves and the ocean, there's no such thing. There's no ocean and there's no waves. Even logically, there's no such thing as a wave or the ocean. What is a wave? It's the ocean. What is the ocean? The wave? They're contrivance. They have no basis. So you might say that, yes, but I went diving in the ocean. I experienced the ocean. What is that experience? Take a look at that experience. It has no basis or ground at all. And if we say that we went diving in the ocean, just consider this for a moment, and you can practice this. It's a beautiful practice. Just say, I went diving in the ocean. Try that. Just say it out loud. I went diving in the ocean. I went to the bathhouse this morning. I went to the bathhouse.
I went to the bathhouse.
I went to the temple.
I went to the temple.
I came from the temple.
I came from the temple.
What is that? Right in the moment that you say it, what is it? There's no temple. There's no place you came from. It's simply like flimsier than a cloud in the mind. It's a memory. So from the point of view of practice, what we're dealing with are memories. And if your memory gets, if your awareness gets very, very sharp, like really sharp and lucid, you're going to see all this as memory construct. When I look at you, I don't even need to look at any of you anymore. For more, and you'll probably say, yeah, that's right, but look at me for very long. But I don't need to look at you, or none of you need to look at me, for more than a fraction of a second to know who you're looking at, right? Why? It's all memory. Imagine if you one day, I get to see you without your mask on, I'll be shocked, I didn't know who you are. I take your mask on. Have I ever known you? Yes, Lama, I was in a 3-week retreat with you. I've never met you before. But if you look at their hair, or look at the shape of their ear, you go, ah, right, it's that shape of the ear. What is it when you say, I've met them before? Met who? Just take a look at what the memory is. And you'll see it's just some very faint image. The temple. Say the word, the temple, the meditation hall.
The temple.
Meditation hall. What is it? What is it really? What is it really? Right now, say it. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it could be any picture. Is it a picture from the rear? Picture from the side? Picture from the front? Picture from the top? Picture from underneath? What picture is it? Picture from 10 years ago, Jeff? Is it a picture from last year? Is it this year? Which picture? Which one of the 20, 30 years of pictures?
Well, it keeps changing.
Isn't that something? There's nothing there at all. And what is it in the mind? Now take a look at that word temple in the mind, that picture in the mind. What is it? Because it appears, and it's light, it's luminous. And because the mind knows it and can identify it, it's cognizant, and therefore it's luminous nature. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
It's coming from emptiness.
It's just empty. It's not even coming from empty. It always was empty. There is no temple. There is no dining room. Even if you have your eyes open like this, you're conjuring the dining room. It's a memory. 99.9% memory. There's just a few little bits that tell you it's a dining room. Hollow body. Hollow body. Right. We're getting there. I can see. This is, underline this one. It's not truly known. It's not truly shown. Nobody can show you the temple. If you walk into the temple, you can't find the temple. What? When you walk in the temple and you say, I'm in the temple, what did you find? A momentary experience, most of it memory, in the mind. Does that mean it's bad or good? No, I'm not making any value judgments. But this is the actual experience. This is real experience as opposed to fabricated experience. Does that make sense? Otherwise, we don't have liberation. We have fabrication and clinging.
So we have to deal with fabrication in the conventional world to be compassionate, don't we?
So what do you think separates an awake being from then what we call a being lost in samsara?
They know the difference.
They know the difference, clearly. This is a very useful book. It's a concept. They know that. They're not fooled by that. They're not fooled that when they walk in a temple, there's a temple. But they can use the temple for skillful compassion means. Make sense? There's no reason in the world why you wouldn't build a new temple. Except for the compassion love of beings that would maybe do better in a reconstructed temple. It's not right or wrong. It's simply what makes sense in terms of compassion for liberation. You could let the whole Dharma Center rot, right? Some people propose that. Let the Dharma Center rot. Sell it off. But is that compassion? Not particularly. But it still is a concept. The Dharma Center is a concept. Namja Rinpoche was able to teach Dharma at his house and not the Dharma Center. Isn't that amazing? I don't know if you're smiling, but I think that's quite something. The Namja Rinpoche could actually teach the Dharma and unfold beings without being at the Dharma Center. He could do it at his house. He could do it at Surima. He even did it on freighters.
How could he do
he
it?
Did, oh, he did it in hotel rooms.
How could he do it, though, in a center that wasn't a Dharma Center?
You mean like in a hotel room in Tunisia? Abhidhamma retreat for 3 weeks in a hotel, rent the hotel, and turn into an Abhidhamma center?
Wow. I got it in a parking lot.
You see, you got it in a parking lot.
Coffee shop?
I got a great instruction once in a bar, a seedy bar in a harbor in Greece. It's a fantastic experience being with Namja Rinpoche. Got a great instruction. In a bar drinking beer with a bunch of sailors hanging out in a bar. So how could that be a Dharma Center? Wherever the mind of the guru is, wherever the mind of the awakeness is the self-emanating palace. But why would you build in a Dharma Center? Because not very many people can train that way. Therefore, he founded the Dharma Center of Canada out of compassion for training and growth and meditation. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do this kind of work mostly in a bar in Greece. Okay? It's really hard. But it's much easier to get a handle on it really good at the Beaver Dam cabin or the Galaxy cabin or Orion cabin. It doesn't mean the training won't happen in a bar or even pith instructions can happen in a bar. Does that make sense? So why do we train in Guru Yoga so much? So any place we can receive teachings. Any place, any time, the teaching's going to rise, not just sitting at the Dharma Center of Canada or in a retreat center. Okay, I'm going to finish this. Number 1.5. It is not truly shown, which means it's not truly established. These so-called words are without a basis. There's no foundation. For example, there's nothing whatsoever that can illustrate the dharmata, the sphere of the enlightened mind, which is like uncompounded space. That is exactly what you want to find. That is the description of guru mind. Mm-hmm. Uncompounded. Nothing that you could ever say about Namjo Rinpoche or Alta Rinpoche would actually be correct. It would be a fabrication. His mind was uncompounded. That's why he could teach anything, anywhere, anytime. So it is considered to be a siddhi or a skill of a Dharma teacher in Vajrayana to be able to teach or liberate beings any place at any time, using, as it says in the text, using any object or means to liberate the being, whereas normally you're constrained by tradition to use an authoritative Dharma text. Does that make sense? But in Vajrayana, one uses one's body, speech, and mind to bring about deliver the pith instructions, hopefully for a suitable vessel that can hear it. So there, underline that. Uncompounded space. Just dwell. Dwell continuously in uncompounded space. It says in the Tantras, by looking inwards at the agent of stirring, that is the mind that stirs things up, unabandoned. Don't abandon it. It is self-liberated like a breeze. Just like a breeze. Like today. You can walk out there and just stand in the field or walk on the road and just stop and feel the breeze. You might come to the experience of uncompounded, and yet there's still a breeze. Because you're not fighting anymore. So here you are. Now, sometimes we need to do this, but anyways, for this, we don't. I'm going to stare down those thoughts until they vanish. I'm going to stay in a samadhi of no thought. You don't have to. It's like fighting with the breeze. It's like a kung fu movie. Yeah? You're standing out there at the Dharma Center, it's like, the breeze is busy. I must defeat it. Just like out of a Chinese kung fu movie, right? Yeah. Right? The breezes are moving through something. And it's like a lot, for what? A lot of drama for what? Let the breeze be. You may find that the mind settles even better when you don't touch it, when you don't keep fighting. Unabandoned is self-liberated like a breeze. That's what it means. Don't fight the breeze. It's a beautiful thing to meditate on hilltops and things, where you're meditating, the mind is calm, the breeze comes up, and blah, it's great. Or those trees, they're making so much noise, they're disturbing my meditation. Or cicadas in New Zealand, you know, remember? They've actually measured 120 decibels. That's the same as the 401 highway, standing over the 401 highway. And you're meditating for like months and months in a cabin or outside the cabin. If you've got irritation, you better liberate it. All day long until there's sunset. And the morning, you know. And then they land on your head, they land on the cabin wall, you're meditating like this, or you think you're safe in your cabin from the then they land on the glass. Mate with me. If you've got built up frustration, right, or irritation in your physiology, watch out. All day long. Great. It says in No Letters, in the view of self-arisen primordial wisdom, there is no object of analysis. In the end, you have to stop analyzing. You have to give it up. There's nothing which passed before. There is nothing that will occur later. There is nothing that exists now. There is no karma. There are no habitual tendencies. There is no unawareness. There is no mind. There is no wisdom. There is no samsara. There is no nirvana. There is not even the existence of awareness itself. There is nothing which appears as primordial wisdom. All those arise from the graspless. Underline graspless. Graspless. That's good for today. The most dangerous passage you could ever come across in Dharma is that passage. That's what really is, pardon my language, screwed up some Dzogchen practitioners. No karma, I can do crazy things. I can do whatever I want. There's no past, there's no future. It's all mind. Well, constructed mind. But so extremely dangerous, but extraordinary instruction. And so the word nothing here, make sure that you're not saying nothing. Go no thing. Okay? Nothing here means no thing. Not nothing, no thing. Nothing is nihilistic. Yeah? It's taking a nihilistic point of view. There is no thing which passed before. There is no thing that will occur later. There is no thing that exists now. There is no thing karma. There are no habitual tendencies. Okay? Just try to find it. Is there ever a time when you're unaware? How could there ever be unawareness? How could there ever be a being who's unmindful? No such thing. An ego formation who has the idea that they're unmindful is unmindful. But mind could never, ever be unmindful. It's not possible. Okay. So, there it is. Graspless. Graspless. Find the graspless. The graspless nature in everything. So we'll return to 1.6 tomorrow. I could say it's just wonderful. Amaho. By this powerful practice, may it lead to the cessation of all the floods for all sentient beings. Idante punyakamana savakyo hontu idante punyakamana savakyo hontu idante punyakamana savakyo hontu. Sarve sattah siddhantu, may all beings be well and happy. And may all beings be established naturally, effortlessly, spontaneously in the primordial ground of awareness, the unity of wisdom and compassion that doesn't truly exist as the most glorious gift for all sentient beings. And let's just say the dedication aspiration in Tibetan. Shalan, if you would lead us in that, just in Tibetan today, and let all the letters of profundity swim and unbind everything that needs unbinding in our mind. For all beings.
Namo cho chu du sam se che chong den de lama yi dang cho su se dang che ling du trang ye ja wa ra chang kun tam che se chi da la su 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 ten ye dang san ka nyam tam che yi
I hope you'll all stay out of trouble today. Whatever that would be, eh? Go find grasplessness.